You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is now 9:33.
Having confronted Hannity and Combs, Oliver North on Fox News, James Fetzer doesn't shy away from controversy. Recently retired from the University of Minnesota, Professor Fetzer tackles the heaviest subjects, including the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, all three of them, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and the death of Senator Paul Wellstone. Later this week, Jim Fetzer will be speaking in an event in Southeast Portland titled, What Happened to JFK and Why It Matters Today? The phone interview follows and concludes with excerpts from a video titled, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, Episode 8, which features Judith Vary Baker, who came out publicly just 6 years ago. Okay, so you are Jim Fetzer, and you are going to be doing a public presentation here in Portland?
That's right, Mel. I'll be flying in late next week and giving a presentation on Saturday at the Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street, about the assassination of JFK and why it matters.
Tell us some details about that. Why was something that happened over 45 years ago still relevant and something that would matter to people today?
Well, we've had a host of events in recent history, including two bombings in Buenos Aires, Argentina in 1992-1994. We've had the events of 9/11. We've had the 7/7 attacks in London. We've had the Madrid bombings, all of which appear to follow into a pattern known as false flag attacks, where elements of the government appear to be attacking their own country in order to instill fear in the population, in order to manipulate the population for political purposes. That appears to have been the case on 9/11 here in the United States, but JFK, where the evidence is overwhelming that elements of the government in collusion with the mafia, the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, anti-Castro Cubans were involved in removing the President of the United States, somebody who was making a tremendous difference and who had evolved from a cold warrior to a statesman for peace, which conflicted with the motives of these powerful interest groups, which include financial interests in relation to the Fed, his desire to cut the oil depletion allowance, which was upsetting to Texas oil men, his desire to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, reduce it back to an intelligence gathering agency and no longer an operational covert agency. He was doing a lot of good things, Mel, but it was upsetting a lot of powerful interests.
Perhaps if we went back into those days, people would have a sense that, in the U.S., that assassinations didn't happen or something.
I lived through it all. When JFK was taken out in 1963, I was 22 years old. I was a young Marine Corps officer. I was anchored out aboard a helicopter carrier in Kaohsiung Harbor in Formosa when the officer of the deck awakened me about 3:30 in the morning to tell me the president had been shot, and then an hour later again to tell me that they'd caught the guy who'd done it. He was a communist. I thought that was pretty fast work. But, of course, if you know who it is you're going to target for an offense like this, then you can make a rapid arrest and you can make a blatant conclusion about him having been culpable, even if the evidence is all against it. And as I shall explain, this man had neither the motive, the means, nor the opportunity to assassinate JFK.
What do you think of Oswald's role in this? Was he a patsy like he mentioned?
There's no doubt about it. His weapon, this Mannlicher Carcano, which was an obscure World War II weapon that I think was selected because it had an odd caliber and therefore they could plant evidence that would suggest that that weapon was used, was actually a massive blunder here. The president was killed by the impact of high-velocity bullets. According to the Warren Commission, the House Select Committee, when it reinvestigated, even articles that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association, but the Mannlicher Carcano has only a muzzle velocity of 2,000 feet per second and is not a high-velocity weapon, which means that the that the rifle Oswald is alleged to have used to kill the president could not have fired the bullets that brought about his death. Simplest possible exoneration. We also know, Mel, that he was actually down around the first floor, the second floor, where there was a lunchroom. He was observed there by a co-worker about 10 minutes to 12:15, as late as 12:25. In fact, Robert Groden, one of the leading students of the assassination, has just now introduced a new witness who appears to be a woman by the name of Geneva Hine, who is actually making change for Oswald so he could purchase a Coke from a machine in the lunchroom at 12:30, and they heard firecrackers, what they thought were firecrackers, taking place. So she has been in fear of her life until now, but I'm quite sure Groden has tapes of her and all that, can, you know, confirm that Oswald wasn't even on the sixth floor. And believe it or not, Marina, his wife, whom he'd married in Russia, had reported subsequently that he admired President Kennedy and bore him no malice. So as I was suggesting before, the man who was fingered by the Warren Commission had neither the motive, nor the means, nor the opportunity to commit the assassination. He was precisely what he said he was, a patsy, and I'll demonstrate all of this during my lecture on Saturday at 2.
Right, and this woman wasn't the only one that feared for her life. Have you heard of Judith Vary Baker?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I'm in correspondence with Judith Baker. I have become convinced that Judith was the real deal, that she knew Lee Oswald in New Orleans. She's doing a great deal to try to vindicate him, and I'm supporting her in that effort.
Yeah, because it wasn't until the History Channel just 6 years ago, when they did their series on JFK assassination, that Judith's story first came out, because I don't know if anyone outside of people very close to her have heard of what she was doing and her relation with Lee Harvey Oswald, who actually she would say was, you know, she was his mistress, not the wife, but
sure. Well,
lover.
There's a portrayal of this in the brilliant series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, by the British director Nigel Turner, where he recently released three additional segments. There had been an initial five, and then there was a sixth segment, but now there's 7, 8, and 9, where number 8 was entitled The Love Affair, and about based on the relationship, the reports from Judith Vary Baker about her relationship with Lee Oswald in New Orleans.
That's right, and I just realized there is the video on the internet. It's not in very many places, but it could be found. And Judith Vary Baker actually has a website, so doing a search,
right,
and people can find out and even view the other series in that The Men Who Killed Kennedy that the History Channel did. And it seems like that's the only time it'll show, because looks like they won't do it again. I don't know if they've been pressured to cease.
Well, this is a series that you can purchase if you're lucky about it. It's the last couple of episodes, especially the last one entitled The Guilty Men, which produced a lot of evidence based upon excellent witnesses, that Lyndon Johnson was profoundly involved in the assassination of JFK, entitled The Guilty Men, created such a controversy that Jack Valenti, a former aide to Lyndon Johnson, took action to have it suppressed, and the History Channel even featured three pseudo historians, one a bona fide historian who knows nothing about the assassination, Robert Dalek, who had a rather good book called An Unfinished Life, but two others, one of whom was from the University of Pennsylvania, a historian of urban sociology of all things, and then a guy who was a constitutional law expert from the University of Wisconsin, and they all just went on the air and said they couldn't imagine that Lyndon Johnson could be involved in this. Well, they didn't know Lyndon Johnson very well, I can assure you, because Lyndon was a powerful figure for good and for bad. He had all the traits that one could possibly imagine. I regard him as the most fascinating figure ever astride the American political stage.
Hmm. And will you be mentioning that in the
presentation? Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. I'll go into it. I had more than 100 conversations with Madeline Duncan Brown, his mistress, by whom he had a son who was born in 1950.
That's not BJ?
Yeah, this is not Linda's only child out of wedlock, but it was his only male offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And she has published a book entitled Texas in the Morning. Billy Saul Estes, the Texas Wheeler dealer, who was involved in a lot of scams that benefited Lyndon and John Connolly and their cronies, has published a book called, A Texas Legend, where he talks about evidence, people he knew, including Cliff Carter, Lyndon's executive assistant, who was sent down to Dallas to make sure the arrangements for the assassination were in place, Malcolm Mack Wallace, who was a professional killer for Lyndon, who killed as many as 11 people, even including one of his sisters, and who appears to have been an actual shooter during the assassination. I'll go into all that.
Well, talking about Judith Berry Baker, she is on the verge of releasing, I think it's her first book, and it's going to be out supposedly in February of 2010. The title is Me and Lee, and I think Crime Day is the publisher. So,
yeah, I think that's great. I haven't seen the book, but... I have a lot of confidence in Judith. In fact, Jim Mars, who's very well known in the JFK research community, the author of Conspiracy, which was one of the two principal books on which Oliver Stone based his film JFK, the other being Jim Garrison's On the Trail of the Assassins, and I co-authored a piece in response to this Harvard computer scientist claiming that he had authenticated backyard photographs of Lee Oswald, which we have long known to be fake. So Jim and I authored a piece about it entitled The Dartmouth JFK Photo Fiasco, which you can find on Google. But it's also archived on this new blog of mine at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. And among other sources we cite is a study by Judith Berry Baker about the backyard photographs. It's very good.
Phil, there's another thing that you've written about, and I thought this was like one of the key elements of the assassination, was the Abraham Zapruder film.
Yeah.
Could you comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have three books of the best experts to ever study the case. One is Assassination Science, published in 1998. The second is Murder in Dealey Plaza, published in 2000. And the third is The Great Zapruder Film Hoax. Well, I brought together a half a dozen experts. We had a conference on the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota in 2003, and I published the book that same year. And it's just a devastating dismemberment of the claim that the film is authentic. It turns out, Mel, you see, that the film has been massively recreated. The timeline's been constricted. Events have been taken out. And if you assume it's authentic, then you cannot ever reconstruct what actually happened because you're acting on a false premise.
Now, Oliver Stone's JFK was released over 15 years ago in the early 90s. What is your review of that film now?
Well, based upon our research, which has been quite extensive, I would say of Oliver Stone's film, that is the most accurate, comprehensive presentation of what actually happened in Dealey Plaza on 22 November 1963 ever presented to the American people through the mass media, except that it's too simple by half because Oliver Stone offers three shooting teams. There actually appear to have been six. JFK was actually hit four different times. He was hit in the throat from in front, in the back from behind, and then in the back of the head and in the head from in front. John Connolly anywhere from one to three times, and then there were at least three shots that missed. So we have 8, 9, or 10 shots that were fired from six different locations.
Right. I'm looking at the event flyer here, and it says one of the subjects is Senator Paul Wellstone, who's the senator right out of your state. So you probably know more about this than, say, people here out in the West.
Well, Wellstone appears to have been taken out for multiple reasons, but most importantly to gain control of the Senate for the Republicans. It was a very nasty piece of work and appears to have been done involving a high-tech weapon. If somebody wants to know about Paul Wellstone, they should go to the assassinationscience.com and just scroll down the menu board to the bottom where they'll find a 58-minute, less than an hour-long lecture there on video where they'll see that I go through the case in great detail.
Yeah, and what happened for the listeners is that after Wellstone's death, Norm Coleman took the seat as he narrowly defeated former Vice President Walter Mondale.
Oh yeah, well between the memorial service and all that, Mondale only had about a week to gain any traction, and there were aspects of Minnesota politics that made it all the more difficult. But I think Norm Coleman was a pathetic replacement for Paul Wellstone, who was a magnificent human being, who had great courage and integrity, and who spoke the truth and opposed the war in Iraq, and was trying to fend off the encroachments by the Bush-Cheney administration on the civil rights of Americans.
Yeah, and as the story continues, Norm Coleman was challenged by Al Franken and was defeated in the last, well, it's been a while now, but in the last election.
Yeah, and the Republicans, just to be obnoxious because they wanted to keep Franken out of the Senate so the Democrats wouldn't have one more vote, resisted conceding the election even after it was long obvious that Franken had won and Coleman had lost. But that's very typical, I'm sorry to say, of the party that's not presently in power.
We'll mention your talk. It's going to be at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House on 4312 Southeast Stark, and that starts at 2 p.m.
On Saturday, exactly right, Mel. Well, I want to thank you for featuring me on your program.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, and I'll probably see you here.
Terrific. I look forward to it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.